Blog Talk Radio.
Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. It's a new summer era. We don't wanna see the heroes. We fighting against each other. It's the love that we need with one another. You understand? Trust might be love. Knowing through all, keep on going. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Gotta get on your grind, don't confuse your mind. Let that dream come true. Stop playing a fool, chatting to my soul. Praying for forgiveness, never get lost in the world of sinners. While I'm trying my vision, seeing knowledge is given, knowing what's been hidden. Living life, only good intentions, not playing the victim. Standing by strength to perfection. Success is your best liquid. Becoming one of noble reflection. Positive vibration in the spirit. Turning for the moment with a blessing. Remember this lesson. Truth be told through these confessions. Why you guessing? Stop stressing. Stop stressing. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold.
Good evening, everybody. Happy Sunday. This is a India Morrell production, Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. And we just heard a song from Kimber entitled Black Renaissance. That's the opening to the show. So again, welcome to the show tonight. And tonight we're going to go into some topics that we didn't get to last week. Okay, and that first topic is going to be the Bill Cosby issue. And the second topic is going to be Spike Lee's Chirac. And the third topic will be Donald Trump, racist or not. And the fourth topic will be apology for slavery, question mark. Okay, but before we do, I want to throw out here a new word that I learned today. I'm hooked up to the dictionary.com app on my laptop as well as on my phone. And interestingly, today they gave out the word cryophilic. I hadn't known what that word meant. Just looking at it, I thought it meant something different than what it doesn't. But anyway, it says cryophilic. Preferring or thriving at low temperatures. And then it gives an example of the word. It says cryophilic or cryotolerant. Species dwell at low temperatures in snow and ice packs. For example, where temperatures typically approach or fall below freezing point of water. I had never known that. Creatures can actually exist and thrive in sub-zero temperatures. That's something to think about. And in snow and ice packs. But I'm throwing that out there because me, I'm totally anti-winter. I can't stand winter. Like I always say, I'm a summer child. And therefore, if it was left up to me, such creatures would never exist because I'd have it hot all the time. But I'm just saying. So anyway, let us go straight on into our first topic tonight, which is going to be the Bill Cosby situation. And okay, and again tonight I'm running the boards here, so bear with me as I do that also. I was trying to pull up a certain song to be played later on, but we'll get to that as we get to that. Excuse me. But okay, first off, I want to read something about the new attorney that has come to the fore on his behalf, this woman named Monique Presley. Neither here nor there that she's a black woman, but she is a black woman. Anyway, it says, the article says that a good attorney in a high-profile case needs to know how to change public opinion. Bill Cosby's attorney, Monique Presley, is trying to do just that. Under the glare of public scrutiny, she has been vehemently defending the beleaguered comedian, projecting poise under pressure. To watch Presley on TV, you never know, this is her first time defending a celebrity this big against charges of this magnitude. In broadcast and cable TV interviews, she is unflappable, talking about Cosby's defamation lawsuit against former model Beverly Johnson. She told MSNBC, "What we're doing now in a court of law is requiring people like Miss Johnson to actually prove what they've said. And I would assert to you today, as we did in the complaint, it cannot be done." I like that part about what she just said there. Definitely so. And the article goes further to say that not long after she was hired by Cosby, Presley talked to Tom Joyner on his top-rated morning radio show. After she explained the ins and outs of the various complaints, allegations, and legal charges, Joyner told her, "You know, Monique Presley, I never heard of you before this, but just listening to you just now, I think Bill Cosby has chosen a very good attorney because you broke that down." I guess he was talking in terms about whatever it was that he had asked her pertaining to the charges and allegations against Cosby. The article goes further to say that Presley is media savvy, according to Lolita Buckner Ennis, a former prosecutor and professor at Cleveland Marshall College of Law at Cleveland State University. This Lolita Buckner Ennis says, "Monique Presley does a masterful job of turning the conversation to the message that she and the Cosby defense team want to deliver." Presley is from Galvin, Texas. This is a bit of autobiography or a bit of biography on Monique Presley. Presley is from Galveston, Texas. In high school, she won honors on the debate team. She received her law degree from Howard University in 1997. Later, as an adjunct faculty member at Howard, Presley helped make history. In 2005, she coached a team of Howard law students for a mock trial competition. The team won, beating 18 law schools, including the reigning champions from Harvard. The win was a first for a historically black law school. And it says further that Presley was a public defender and an assistant attorney general for the District of Columbia. So she has quite a bit of experience, as we see here. And the article goes further to even speak about somewhat about her religion or her religious precepts or principles. It says here that today Presley runs her own firm. Her personal website says she's also an ordained minister. In 2013, she founded Monique Presley's Ministry. On her radio show, Breathe Through It, her guests have included the prominent religious figures Bishop T.D. Jakes and attorney Benjamin Crump, who represented the families of Trayvon Martin, who was killed in Florida, and Michael Brown, who was fatally shot by a police officer in Ferguson, Missouri. As Presley tells it, one of Cosby's loyal supporters heard her talking about his case on the radio show and suggested he hire her. Martin says, for Presley, there is no comfort zone in this kind of high-stakes emotionally charged case being played out in the public arena. In some ways, Monique is on a lonely journey. I guess they're saying that Martin, I guess they're talking about Roland Martin. Yes, that's who they're talking about, Roland Martin. And it says, goes further to say that her gender and her race matter, because Bill Cosby is being charged with sexual assault of several women. The idea that if an intelligent, well-spoken black woman stands with Bill Cosby on this, then perhaps some of those people who accuse Bill Cosby are lying. Buckner Ennis urges people watching the Cosby coverage, to be skeptical. This week, Presley and Cosby had some good news. The Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office declined to file criminal charges against him, though he still faces a criminal charge in Pennsylvania and multiple civil suits. Well, that had happened about 2 weeks ago when that DA in Los Angeles declined to press charges against Cosby in that case out there. So, well, one could almost say that it almost seems like the lawyer that he had, or the team of lawyers he had before Monique Presley joined them, it almost seemed like they weren't doing anything, because it does seem like once this woman came on the scene, a lot of people began to think differently on the issue. And I guess perhaps, like the article had indicated, perhaps that could have been a strategic move to hire a black woman, not just a black woman, but someone proficient in their craft, or someone proficient in doing what they do concerning the lawyerly aspect of this situation. Well, more so knowing the legal parameters of the law. And again, it almost seems like the men who were there initially, I guess if they were men only, they may not have known exactly what to do. Maybe they felt, swamped, or maybe they felt intimidated. That's not the right word either, but perhaps they felt overwhelmed by the number of women, you know, coming out and accusing Bill Cosby of sexual assault. But then again, their lawyers also, and it's interesting that they weren't pushing back as this Monique Presley had begun to do as soon as she got there on the case. And it was good to see that. But also there's more on this Monique Presley person. Let's see here. It says here, this article goes back to say that a new attorney for Bill Cosby vigorously defended the entertainer in an exclusive interview on Good Morning America, chastising the media for misrepresenting chastising the media for misrepresenting what she said in a deposition for a lawsuit he settled in 2006. There are thousands plus pages that are available of Mr. Cosby in his own words, and what we're seeing so far are headlines that are grabbing one excerpt or two and misinterpreting them, Ms. Presley told the morning show. The deposition said that there was use of quaaludes, which was done often in the 70s. It was considered a party drug called disco biscuits, and it was something that was done frequently, not just by Mr. Cosby, but other entertainers. She also addressed the allegations of the nearly 50 women who said Cosby drugged and sexually assaulted them. She says also that I'm not making conclusions, and you know that I can't, about whether someone is lying or not, she says. What I'm saying is that Mr. Cosby has denied the accusations that have been lodged thus far. The sheer volume or number of people who are saying a particular thing does not make it true. Presley made the same point about the sheer volume of accusers when she spoke on a panel about the Cosby scandal. Ms. Presley has said, you will have some people who will come forward and join the bandwagon. If you know the police department messed up in a certain park on a certain day, you'll have 30 people who will come forward to cash in who weren't even there, who were at lunch across the street, who were looking from the window. So Just because people come forward and say, 30 years ago, he, Bill Cosby, put something in my cup, doesn't mean he did it, she said. Okay, we're coming up on 15 minutes to the hour. Matter of fact, we are at 15 minutes to the hour. And now it's time for a song that I have been trying to pull up here. Let me see here, the song that I'm going to pull up. I have one ready, but then the playlist kind of skipped, and that song that I had is not there right now. So I'm going to try to pull up another song. All right, no, not that one there. Let's see here. I'll just have to go with a song here. Let's see what happens. I'm not even sure if I can play that song there, but then again, it is here on the playlist, and I can't see why I can't pull up this other song. But just a second, let me try to get this thing here together. But in the meantime, as I'm scrolling down, I'm going to try to still talk on this Monique Presley situation. That, well, matter of fact, I would even say right now we haven't heard. Well, I haven't heard much about her, or even the Cosby situation on the news as of late. Maybe that attests to the great job that that she's now doing. Okay. Okay, I'm just going to go to a song. Let me see here. What song am I going to play here? I can't make this thing go up and down. Let me see. Okay, I'm just going to go to a song here. It's from TBT, all right, it's from Lauren Cameron. The song is entitled So High. So this is Lauren Cameron, So High. Let's see if I can engage the song.
So high.
Okay, welcome back to Urban Society here on India Morell's Dollhouse Radio. We just heard the song from Lauren Cameron entitled So High. That was Lauren Cameron, So High. And just saying, I think I have finally got the actual playlist that I should be playing songs from. I had to do that while I was listening to the song and getting other things ready. Anyway, this is interesting. I'm loving it. But anyway, still on the issue of the Bill Cosby situation, and with particular reference to the new attorney that is now on his team, this Monique Presley. I want to put out here that even before she had come on his team, you know, I was in talking with people about this case, as it was in the media. I would always bring up the point or the fact, as it had been said, and as this Monique Presley had also pointed out. Well, yes, I guess she pointed out, but it had also been pointed out previously too. But I guess it didn't really stick. But Quaaludes back then was considered, you know, a party drug, I guess, you know, in the 70s. And Quaaludes was one name for it, but I guess another name for it was Spanish Fly. And I recall that there was a lot of talk about that drug with the term or with the name Spanish Fly. A lot of guys were really craving to get some of that to give some girl, but that's neither here nor there. But also, the way it turns out, it's almost as if women even, I guess, like that drug. I'm guessing, I'm not knowing, but if it was a party drug, I guess then one might say a party drug for whom? Was it a party drug for both the male and female in terms of the male getting it and then the female knowing he has it and then not minding trying it or taking it? But I guess also knowing what the results would be. I mean, the way it's stated is, well, like the way we're told about this drug in reference to the Bill Cosby situation, we're told about the drug in the sense that it in a real sense, makes the woman immobile. It makes her basically non-functional. And therefore, I mean, in an unfortunate position to be taken advantage of. But I don't know if that is or was the reaction on the female with the drug. I don't know that because I never had any of that. I don't know anything about it other than what I'm reading now or what I have read due to the Bill Cosby situation. But what I have thought in reference to what I just said was that if this was considered a party drug and was readily available to anybody who could get it and I guess has the money for it, I mean, well, my thinking was Bill Cosby, he even said in his deposition that he did give women, and not only did he give women this drug, but he bought that drug to give to women. But at the same time, I guess other men were buying that drug to also give to women. And my thinking went further to think, if this was the case with Bill Cosby, as it was the case with so many others in his circle, let us just say in his circle, why aren't those other men, or why haven't those other men been brought up on the same charges that Bill Cosby has now been brought up on? I mean, because if that is the case, other women who have taken that drug, or well, not taken it, let me back up, if other women who have been given that drug, if they now feel that they can cry rape, why haven't they, as has been done with Bill Cosby? That's just a wonder to me. That's what I thought about, because to speak about that drug, Quaaludes, and then hearing about the way it was taken or so accessible back then, it kind of reminds me of the way crack cocaine is today. and in terms of, giving it to women. I mean, because as is known, if it's known, as it was said, women do anything for that drug. But then again, not just women, so do some men. Yes, that's also true. But that's another issue. But what I'm saying in reference to that is that if Quaaludes in the 70s is the crack, came to be the crack cocaine of the 80s and 90s and 2000s, I mean, where will that lead us if, let's say, some women 20 years hence decide to accuse some guy of having taken advantage of her because of her crack cocaine habit? I mean, I'll use the term, it's a slippery slope there, so to speak. But also, not only that, in terms of, you know, why haven't other women come forward talking about other men who gave them that drug? You know, because one person or one guy who comes to mind would be that guy, Hugh Hefner. You know, the guy who the Playboy magazine, I guess mogul they call him today, you know, who founded the Playboy magazine empire. I mean, we can very well imagine that he had that drug. I mean, I can imagine that he would have had access to it. I'm not saying that that he actually needed it, but then again, if he could get it, I mean, why wouldn't he? And then again, if he did, how come women aren't accusing him of having taken advantage of them the way they're now accusing Bill Cosby of having taken advantage of them? It's just a lot to do with that whole thing. And as I'm saying, I think it's good that that this woman has come forward, and with all her legal knowledge, is defending Bill Cosby, you know, in a courtroom, and plus in terms of public opinion. Because even still, concerning all the women who have come forward and saying that they were raped by Bill Cosby, you know, how can I put this here? Because of today, what has been termed a rape culture, a lot of people today, well, not a lot of people, but a lot of women, and educated women in particular, they talk about our country having a rape culture, and that in a real sense pertains to how hard it is for women to appear or to come forward into the legal system with the allegation or charge or statement that somebody, some male has raped her, some man has raped her, and because of the awesome burden of proof that's then thrown back at the woman. I mean, it's almost, well, not almost like, but I'm quite sure there are cases, have been cases, wherein a woman could, I mean, I'm being extreme here, but we can very, very well imagine that this too is true. No doubt a woman perhaps has brought herself to a police station, I mean, clothes all ripped off her, bloody even, and saying that she'd been raped. And, you know, the police, male police more so than not, would look at her askant, like, okay, you were raped, but what did you do? Yeah, I mean, you know, that's why women today speak in terms of, you know, a rape culture. In other words, you know, men in this country are more so not inclined to believe a woman's word that she was raped than to believe her word that she had been raped. And so, like I said, the awesome burden of proof is just automatically thrown to the woman. Prove that you were raped, you know. But in having said that, I want to come back to say that because of that phrase, rape culture, and because it is difficult for a woman in this society to prove that, well, not even prove, but to even be believed that she was raped, that in a case like that, we can say that because, how can I put this here? And because still thinking about the term rape culture. Because it's almost like, how can I put this here? It's almost like on the same level as speaking about a police culture of violence when we talk about a rape culture against women. You know, that's about the best way that I can try to understand, you know, the word culture put to rape. You know, it's just a persistent pattern. That's what more so the term culture in this sense mean. It's like it's just a persistent pattern. It's just a thing that is in fact done to women, and then women are not believed when they report such things, because men just automatically believe that you must have done something to brought this on. You know, that falls back into, you know, the rape culture aspect of what is put forward to us. And in saying all that, what I'm really coming or trying to say is that my thinking in terms of this Bill Cosby situation and these women coming forward as they have done, I think based upon, you know, this concept of a rape culture, many women are more willing to give them the benefit of the doubt that this probably is true, as opposed to it not being true. Because it's almost like, you know, like I said, they are just given the benefit of the doubt without any proof. And then again, as this Monique Presley woman has said, in a real sense, where is the proof that my client did this to you? And again, I mean, because, as I'm saying, because women, you know, have bought into the terminology of a rape culture. I mean, Bill Cosby was just like a cooked goose in a real sense before this Monique Presley person came on the scene to try to tell us that, you know, hey, a person is innocent until proven guilty. Did we forget this? This is what Monique Presley had put back into the equation. And then even going further as to really tell us to look at this from a different angle. And one of those angles was that particular drug was a common drug back in that day that men as well as women knew about. You know, so anyway, more on this Bill Cosby issue. I have another article here, and again, it's talking about Monique Presley, wherein the article was entitled "I Am Not Victim Blaming, But Women Have Responsibility." But I think we got it. Well, so I'm going to go into as much of this article as I can before the next break. Okay, yes, we have about a minute, even some seconds, actually. But I hope people understand, you know, where I'm coming from as I'm talking about this Monique Presley person. And then again, the idea or terminology of a culture of rape that exists in this country, or a rape culture, as people tend to term it, which I'm not exactly in disagreement with. I can follow their logic in terms of speaking about a rape culture or a culture of rape. But at the same time, I'm one who still will be willing to ask for proof here. I mean, because anybody can say anything, but just because they say it, that does not mean that it is true. Okay, so right now it's 5 minutes after the hour, and we're going to go into our next song that I have found here. And it's a new song, I understand, from Kanye West featuring Ty Dolla and Kendrick Lamar, entitled "Real Friends" and "No More Parties in L.A." I think that's the name of the song. So this is Kanye West, Ty Dolla, and Kendrick Lamar, Real Friends and No More Parties in L.A. So here we go.
Jealous, real friends, there's not many of us. We smile at each other, but how many honest trust issues? Switch up the number, I can't be bothered. I cannot blame you for having an angle. I ain't got no issues, I'm just doing my thing. Hope you're doing your thing too. I'm a deadbeat cousin, I hate family reunions. Fuck the church up by drinking at the communion. Spilling free wine, now my tux is ruined. In town for a day, what the fuck we doing? Who your real friends? We all came from the bottom. I'm always blaming you, but what's sad, you not the problem. Damn, I forgot to call him. Shit, I thought it was Thursday. Why you wait a week to call my phone in the first place? When was the last time I remembered a birthday? When was the last time I wasn't in a hurry?
Tell me you want those tickets when it's game time. Even to call your daughter on the FaceTime. Even when we was young, I used to make time. Now we be way too busy just to make time. Even for my
real friends, I guess I get what I deserve, don't I?
Word on the streets that they ain't heard from them.
I guess I get what I deserve, don't I? Talk down on my name, throw dirt on them. I couldn't tell you how old your daughter was. Couldn't tell you how old your son is. I got my own junior on the way, dog. Plus, I already got one kid.
Couldn't tell you much about the fam, dog. I just showed up for the games, dog.
Maybe 15 minutes, took some pictures with your sister. Merry Christmas, then I finished. Then it's back to business. You wanna ask some questions about some real shit? Like I ain't got enough pressure to deal with. Please don't pressure me with that bill shit.
Cause everybody got them that ain't children. Oh, you been nothing but a friend to me.
Niggas thinking I'm crazy, you defending me. Funny, I ain't spoke to niggas in centuries. To be honest, dog, I ain't feeling your energy.
Money turn your kin into an enemy. Niggas ain't villains, they pretend to be. Looking for
real friends.
Real friends.
How many of us? How many of us are real friends? To real friends, to the real end. To the reels, to the wheels don't spin.
Yeah, yeah.
To 3 a.m. calling. How many
real friends?
Just to ask you a question, just to see how you was feeling. How many? For the last, you was frontin'. I hate when a nigga text you like, what's up, man? Hope you good. You say, I'm good, I'm great. The next day, they ask you for something. How many?
What's best for your family, immediate or extended? Any argument, the media extended.
I had a cousin that stole my laptop that I was fucking bitches on. Pay that nigga $250,000 just to get it from him. Real friends. Huh? Real friends. I guess I get what I deserve, don't I?
Word on the streets that they ain't heard from him.
I guess I get what I deserve, don't I? Talk down on my name, throw dirt on them.
No more parties in LA, no more,
please,
please. Hey baby, you forgot your Ray-Bans, and my sheets still orange from your spray tan.
It was more than stuff born for the caveman. She remember my sprinters and I was in the great band. Well, cutie, I like your bougie booty. Come here, come by, do me. Well, let's make a movie. Hell, you know my repertoire is like a wrestler. Show you the rope, connect the dots. Hey, country girl in the party.
Okay, that was that song. Actually, in reading the title, I kind of thought that two songs somewhat were connected up in there, but I wasn't sure, but I figured, well, go on and let it play out. So that was Kanye West featuring Ty Dolla and Kendrick Lamar, entitled Real Friends, and then something else that came in there called No More Parties in L.A. So, as I said, welcome back to Urban Society here on India Morrell's Dollhouse Radio. And we're still on the issue of the Bill Cosby issue. I got kind of confused in there in trying to explain the rape culture situation as is understood by a lot of people today. I mean, but then again, when we speak in terms of, when we think in terms of the situation of rape culture, we can also extend that phrase outside of this country. And in particular, go into the Middle East in particular. You know, unfortunately, those Muslim countries wherein women have no rights at all. And it's a long story there. But, you know, that's really where I think, you know, the rape culture idea or terminology comes in at or comes from, when we can see this situation of women being vulnerable on a much larger scale. And like society just, well, those in society, men in particular, just turn a blind eye to it, or, you know, look at the woman askant, like, oh, yeah, okay, so what do you want me to do about it? Outrageous. But anyway, this Monique Presley, she does go into say in another article that I'm not victim blaming, but women have responsibility. And the article starts off by saying that Bill Cosby's attorney, Monique Presley, told Huffington Post that all women who are sexually assaulted have a responsibility to immediately report it to create evidence of the crime. Evidence, she says, does not exist in the accusations against her client. Presley rejected the idea that her defense of the comedian constitutes victim blaming, a phenomenon she wrote of as a hashtag. Presley spoke with host Mark Lamont Hill days after allegations of rape against Cosby reached a new crest, with 35 of his alleged victims appearing on the cover of New York Magazine. The lawyer said the decades-old stories of those and other women who have accused Cosby can never be proven or disproven without evidence that would have existed had they reported the assault earlier. And she says further that I'm not speculating, I'm not thinking, I'm not opining or opining, I'm not waxing poetic, but what I'm saying is women have responsibility. We have responsibility for our bodies, we have responsibilities for our decisions, we have responsibility for the way we conduct ourselves, she said. She insisted that though she does not blame any woman for not reporting a rape or assault, their decision not to do so is the foundation of Cosby's defense. The only way for a woman to get the justice that she seeks, and that, if her allegation is true, that she deserves, is to come forward soon after the crime. And even if the reasons that the woman did not do that are legitimate ones, what cannot happen, in my opinion, in the United States, is that 40 years later, there is a persecution tantamount to a witch hunt where there was no prosecution timely and there was no civil suit timely. And there's not any testimony or any accusation from any of these women that Mr. Cosby in any way bound them, gagged them, prevented them from coming forward and saying whatever their truth was at the time. She says further, that's not what happened, but we see what happened. And then even in terms of that, you know, by reading what she said there, another thought came to mind, or more so, another thought was reinforced in my mind, and that was that all these women who have come forward, they all have told a similar story in essence of being drugged by Bill Cosby. Now, my thinking, as she somewhat alluded to, is if Bill Cosby had this reputation, why would woman after woman, you know, put themselves in a position to be drugged by him? I mean, if it's known that that is what this guy does when he's with women, why would another woman, you know, go with him? Because, you know, it's not like it was a secret. I mean, it's not like, let us say that women don't talk amongst themselves, and it's not like word didn't get out that Bill Cosby had quaaludes. So again, all I'm saying here or asking is that women, knowing his forte, his motive operandi, so to speak, or the way he operates, you know, how he gets down, so to speak. If they know how he gets down, why would they put themselves in that position to be taken advantage of like that? That's just something that I wonder about. But then again, you know, I don't know. I do not know. But it's just unfortunate. Well, it's just unfortunate that what happened has happened. I mean, if it's true that that he did, in fact, you know, force himself upon these women, that's unfortunate. And further, it's unfortunate if what these women are saying isn't true or isn't altogether true, you know. But anyway, so that's that issue with Bill Cosby. And as I said before, I mean, you know, a man is innocent until proven guilty. Well, so the law says. So the law says. And for the longest, until this Monique Presley came along, Bill Cosby was being crucified. I mean, really, in public opinion, and, you know, the media spending public opinion. He was being crucified, I mean, outrageously. But then now, as we see, I mean, the situation has died down a hell of a lot. But okay, so moving right along, we're going to go on into our next topic now concerning Spike Lee and his movie Chirac. I had meant to have gotten into this long ago. But the movie is still out, and I have not as of yet seen it, and I probably will not see it because I really don't I don't watch movies like that where there, in my opinion, is really no, for lack of a better word or term, I'll say no intellectual content. That's what I'll say, you know, or even movies that like to portray black people and or black urban environments, you know, just a lot of shooting and killing, a lot of gunplay, and like a lot of women just walking around, you know, let us just say loose, and, you know, just being flirtatious. I don't like watching movies like those. I mean, give me something like, because just saying, to kind of illustrate the kind of person that I am, well, my mindset, I'm a Trekkie. I was a Star Trek fan when I was a child, and I grew up watching Star Trek and Outer Limits and Twilight Zone, things of that nature, you know, something that make a person think, not just having thinking stupidly, so to speak. Anyway, so with this movie of Spike Lee's called Chirac, I'll say first off that Stacey Patton, this woman whom I speak of often here on the show, Dr. Stacey Patton, she had introduced me to this article from some woman. I think her name is Charin Balls. It's spelled Charinbball. And she gave a critique of the movie. She says here that if you are boycotting Chirac on principle, I definitely respect that. But if you are going to critique it, you definitely are going to have to watch it first. That's what she says. But like I said, I haven't watched it. And but I have watched other Spike Lee movies, and I didn't exactly like them. I even watched his first movie, Do the Right Thing, and I didn't particularly like that either because I thought he was coming from a very, very shallow perspective. I'll put it like that. Anyway, this person here says that My trepidation is the film's stated plot itself, which centers around black women orchestrating a sex strike as an answer to any city Chicago gun violence. Yes, I know that it is inspired by the 4th century Greek comedy Lysistrata. And yes, I know that was also inspired by the Liberia sex strike. I saw the movie, remember? Well, she's saying here that I guess in Liberia, you know, the country where they had that Ebola situation, Liberia and Sierra Leone, I guess they had a situation there wherein the women actually did have a sex strike among other functions that they had done to get a certain situation correct or corrected. And then this article here says that, however, when does the knowledge of the inspiration of something, particularly an artful something, shield it from critique? Because that's something there that Spike Lee don't feel that his movie should be criticized so roundly. It's like he feels that what he does is above critique. In other words, it's like he says, just sit down and watch the damn movie. That's what he's saying. And this woman here says, what I mean is the Liberia sex strike, as it will come to be christened by the Western media, was one small action in a much more involved nonviolent campaign for peace in the West African nation. The peace movement was founded and led by a group called the Women of Liberia Mass Action for Peace, and under the leadership of two social workers named Lamai Gbowee, that's spelled G-B-O-W-E-E, and Comfort M. Freeman. Thousands of women from across the religious and ethnic tribe spectrum engaged in nonpartisan action aimed at ending the 4-year civil war that killed an upward of 200,000 people, displaced millions, raped women and girls, and turned boys into child soldiers. Through a mass sit-in, the women held the warring men up in a room, denying them both food and water until an agreement was reached. And when those peace talks threatened to sour, it was a protest that again kept them at the table. And it says here further that, unwilling to tolerate another month of dead-end negotiations, 200 women held a sit-in at the peace talks in Ghana, demanding that the parties come to a conclusion. Authorities attempted to arrest them, but to no avail. When negotiators tried to exit, Gbowee, that's spelled again G-B-O-W-E-E, and the women threatened to strip off their clothes, an act that would shame male delegates. It says here further that during a 2011 address to the Oslo Freedom Forum, Gbowee spoke in her own words about that particular action at the peace talks. Excuse me. Some people ask me, this is her talking here, she says, some people ask me, what is it about women stripping naked that makes people run, or even made the conscience of a group of men who have paid and drug boys to rape these same women to wake up? The thing is, when you are raped in conflict, when you are stripped naked in conflict, it is against your will. When a group of women or when a group of people get to the place where they decided that I'm going to give you the last shred of my dignity, that is something to even wake anyone up, even the most heartless dictators. The peace agreement was signed 3 weeks after this action. So in a real sense, I guess what this woman is saying is that Spike Lee got the idea of this movie from that 4th century writer who wrote about Lastradia, if I'm pronouncing her name correctly, wherein she, in this play, had done that there in Greece to stop the nations from warring against each other. The women got together and pulled off the sex stripe. You know, no sex for the men until they, you know, put down their arms. And in this case, the people of Liberia, the women of Liberia, decided that they do the same thing. And evidently, based upon what is written, that worked. But again, it wasn't just not to give them sex, but we, as I read, they refused to give them food and water. Also, it's like they had them locked in a room and refused to let them exit that room until some kind of peace accord had come about to stop the violence. As they said, upwards of more than 200,000 people have been killed already because of this no doubt senseless conflict. And so I guess, well, let me go on and read more from the article. And it says that here, when Western media focused solely on the sex strike, it did so at the expense of erasing efforts of these activists who used whatever was at their disposal, including their brains, mouths, pens, and bodies, to bring peace to Liberia. When we focus solely on the sex strike, we strip these women naked against their will. And unfortunately, Chirac is guilty of the same transgression. And she goes further to say that it says here that in spite of several strong lead performances, women characters in the film were virtually voiceless and one-dimensional. Oh, they spoke and had lines, but when they spoke, most of their dialogue centered around men, their desire for sex with men, and the relation of all of that to their autonomy, a.k.a. Here they wrote autonomy, not anatomy, but I guess the word should have been that, excuse me, it should have been their desire for sex with men and the relation of all of that to their anatomy, a.k.a. the pussy. That's what they wrote. There was no talk or even challenge. There was no talk or even challenge the misogynist attitudes or even sexual violence, which is often waged at their expense. Excuse me again. But again, they talk about the sexual violence there. That again is alluding to the rape culture, the culture of raping women. I mean, just a mindset that it's okay to rape women, which it is not okay to rape women. Some men don't know that. And I would say, praise be, that it is the minority of men who do believe it's okay to rape women and act on that belief that it's okay to rape women. However, it's unfortunate, too, that a majority of men somewhat, I mean, they don't go for, how can I put it, they wouldn't go for the actual physical act, but somewhere in their mind, they more so will pause for thought. You know, that's fucked up there, but that is a truism. So I guess it's really a minority of men who do think and feel that it's not okay to rape women. I had to change that. Interesting. Anyway, it says this article goes further to say that most ironic is the scene of the film when the girlfriend and wives of the two opposing Chicago street gang leaders finally reveal the terms of their protest to their partners. And it goes here to say that unlike the women of Liberia, who went as far as deny food and drink to the men for peace, in Lee's vision of women empowerment, women are still beholden to patriarchal ideas of feminine duties and responsibilities, including fixing your man a plate. You know, because you can deny men your power, a.k.a. sex, for the cause of peace, but to deny him a plate of fried chicken and some collards is a bridge too damn far. I guess she's being sarcastic there, but yeah, I mean, like I said, I haven't seen the movie, but she's seen the movie, and she's saying that actually took place in the movie. I mean, you know, well, whatever. But anyway, going further into this article, let's see here. let me see here. It says, this goes into, well, it says here, in one particularly confusing sequence, the main character named Lysistrata and her sex strikers take command of a military base by seductively teasing a high-ranking white official in Confederate flag underwear with the promise of sex. The article goes further to say that it was a dangerously sick narrative which might play well into the pornographic fantasies of heterosexual men, but it also disregards the fine line in consciousness as in consciousness we black women have to walk to not be judged as Jezebels and Sapphires. Likewise, it is a narrative that disregards the ways in which rape and sex has historically been used as weapons by our oppressors against black women. And this was no sex appeal, as there was no sex appeal strong enough that freed our ancestors from the slave labor of the plantation, no more than there is for us free black descendants who are routinely accused of being prostitutes to this day. So that's she's talking about Spike Lee's film in the real sense, as in actuality, it did a disservice to women as opposed to uplifting women. Okay, and then that's that article about Spike Lee's movie Chirac. You know, but even Stacey Patton, this Dr. Stacey Patton, she had also written a critique of Spike Lee's movie Chirac. And what she says here, well, actually she says a hell of a lot here, but let me try to get to the gist of what she was talking about. Okay, one thing that Dr. Stacey Patton says is, if Lee's only intent is to raise consciousness and incite positive social change, the fact that he's centering the conversation on black women's bodies and sexuality is not only problematic, it's dangerous. Chicago is a cesspool of state violence. And then she goes, well, Dr. Patton goes on to mention back then, she said, like, right now the recent national attention is on the case of Laquan McDonald, a black teenager who was shot 16 times last year by police officer Jason Van Dyke, who claimed that McDonald was trying to attack him. And she goes further to say that this corruption is nothing new. Chicago police have been known for altering arrest reports, using racially derogatory terms, and widespread abuse. And though public pressure undoubtedly has played a role in Van Dyke being charged, the fact that it took 14 months to charge him and the broader history gives little hope that justice will prevail. See, she's coming from that perspective in terms of Spike Lee's movie. Spike Lee, he more so hinges his cameras on black people primarily, and the violence that they do to each other, I guess, in the movie. Exactly. That's what he hinges his camera on, the violence that blacks do to each other, you know, on a continual basis. But as Dr. Patton is pointing out, he totally neglects the state orchestrated violence against black people. He tends to unfocus or not even focus his lens on that. But again, basically blaming the victims of violence. How can I put it? Blaming the victims of state-orchestrated violence in one form or another or in many forms, but just concentrating on the violence that each individual in those communities do to each other without giving any actual context as to why this violence does, in fact, take place. And then Dr. Patton says that deferred orgasms aren't going to fix these problems. From a goofy white mayor who boasts that because his wife is biracial, he can crow about banging black booty. I guess that's a part of that movie. I guess so. to the young, beautiful, barely dressed women on strike in high fashion chastity belts, Lee is peddling fantasies and cartoons that seem to that seem to ascribe superpowers to black women's sexual organs, as though pussy is a magic wand that can spark massive social consciousness and political change to heal our wounds, solve our deeply rooted, multifaceted issues and multi-generational traumas so we can all live happily ever after. And she says further, that is Dr. Stacey Patton says, to offer satire, even if it's well done, which it's not, in response to such horrid circumstances is irresponsible. The tragedies of almost daily murders are not the product of simple choices. It is the result of historic, systemic divestment in communities of color, state violence, white supremacy. It is about a school closure and home foreclosures, which, according to one study, contributes to violence. Had Lee included the partners of bankers, I like this part that she wrote about the critique of Spike Lee's movie. She says, had Lee included the partners of bankers and policymakers, school officials and police officers refusing to provide sex unless they stop state violence, Chirac would have added to these discussions. Otherwise, it is just more of the same, putting the black community on trial for its own death. And at the center are the bodies of black women. And it goes further to say that Chirac contributes to a long-held tradition of citing black women's bodies as both the source and the solution to social problems. In the film, he has the movement completely rely on the premise of hot, young, scantily clad women refusing to have sex with their gangster men. The inference is that black women have so much power and we can fix society if only we would use our sexual power. In other words, all the responsibility is on us and our genitalia. She says further, does Lee have no sense of how dangerous, let alone ludicrous, it is to reduce black women's activist contributions to pussy power? Given the realities of black women and rape culture, while the media is debating Chirac, very few outlets are covering the trial of Oklahoma police officer Daniel Holtzclaw, who is accused of raping 13 black women, and predictably, those victims' credibility is being attacked while Holtzclaw miraculously gets an all-white jury to decide his fate. But we can see now that at least that all-white jury did do the right thing, to use a terminology that Spike Lee did put forth. I think that was the only good thing about that movie, that is the name of it, Do the Right Thing. But anyway, going back to Chirac, I just read in a real sense two different women's critique of Spike Lee's movie, and basically both are, in a sense, saying the same thing, that they feel that that he did a disservice to the struggle that we are confronted with here in this country by, in a real sense, placing all the blame on the victims who are victimized. And then further, what Spike Lee has done is he brought women into the situation in which, in his mind, was the only way in which he could, and that is in a sexual nature. I mean, one can't imagine that Spike Lee himself might be one who could understand the mind of men who, how can I put it? Spike Lee might be one of those who can understand the mind of men who fit that rape culture analogy. Because in a real sense, if he was not, perhaps he would not have put a movie forth as this one is. you know, the whole sex strike and thing as if sex is all you need. I mean, sex we need, but that's not all we need. I'll put it like that, but I guess in Spike Lee's thinking, sex is more of all that we need than what we think. But no. That anyway. But like I said, that's why I'm not a real fan of Spike Lee. Not at all. And in saying that, I want to mention this also. One day at work, a colleague and I, a male colleague even, we were talking about that movie, and I was somewhat basing my objections to the movie. Like I said, granted, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm not a fan of what Spike Lee does. I think he's too superficial. I really do. But anyway, this was somewhat our conversation, or this is what I wrote here. I wrote, I was talking with a colleague at the workplace, and the conversation went into police killings of blacks and black-on-black crime. He is one, though black, who feels it's ridiculous for blacks to be all bent out of shape when a police person kills a black person, but aren't so bent out of shape when a black person kills a black person in urban environments. He asked me, can you justify why that is? He asked me that. Excuse me. Yes, he did. He asked me, because I was, I guess, sounding the way I was sounding, he asked me, can you justify why that is? And I wrote, I told him, it's not up to me to justify that. In my mind, I'm thinking, based upon his question, there's no justification for murder. There is no sense in a police person killing an unarmed individual. There's also no sense in blacks taking the lives of other blacks, although in both instances a reason or justification is given that's supposed to make sense. Anyway, still pondering his question, I figured I'd ask him, can you justify war? He said, wow, how can you go from black-on-black crime to asking about a justification for war? To me, it was easy, because him asking me how can I justify blacks killing blacks, let's see, if that was his question, basically, yes. You know, if he can ask me that question, I can just well ask him, can you justify war? Both are just as ridiculous and insane. There is no justification. That's one of those not to be understoods. But, well, I have to say here, I have seriously overtalked. I have missed, I think, a few music breaks. So, therefore, I'm going to have to go on into a music break right now. I wasn't even watching the time. I was so wrapped up in saying what I was saying. That happens. when I come back, I'll even mention something about me talking. And let me just go on into this song here. Okay, I'm going to play a song from our producer, Indy Morrell. It's not a long song. I would figure that it should be longer than what it isn't. But it's called You Don't Deserve Me. So let's try this one here. This is from our producer, Indy Morrell. She also sings. Yes, she does.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Urban Society here on Indie Morrell Dials Radio. And we just heard a song from Indie Morrell entitled You Don't Deserve Me. That was Indie Morrell, You Don't Deserve Me. But like I said, the song should have been longer, but, well, we heard what we heard. Interesting. So going back into, we just left the article of Chirac, but this is still somewhat related. Because I just went into a conversation that a colleague and myself were having at the workplace, and it revolved around the issue that Spike Lee was more so putting forth, such as, in his opinion, what he considers also black on black crime, and a way suggestion per satire how to stop it. But anyway, before I left. I had mentioned how I had overtalked and had missed playing a song or two. And what I had wanted to relate, a lot of times when I do find myself talking, I get caught up in what I'm talking about. And case in point, that even has happened when I'm driving. That's why, excuse me, when someone is in a car with me and I'm driving, I try to tell them, you know, let us not get caught up in the conversation, because I'll get wrapped up in saying what I'm saying and or listening to what's being said. And I'm the kind of person, being so wrapped up in, like I say, the conversation, unfortunately, I'll drive right through a red light because I don't realize, all I know is that I'm driving my car. I know I'm driving, I know I'm listening to what's being said and or saying what I'm saying. And that's dangerous. It's almost like talking on a cell phone. I mean, you get caught up listening to what you're hearing and or into the conversation on the cell phone, and you're just driving. You're not really paying attention to what you're doing, or you're doing things mechanically. Yeah, but that's not a good thing. And I tell people, like I say, you know, don't try to get, well, please don't get me caught up in the conversation, because I'll just be driving this car and we will go right through a red light. And sometimes even if because I'm very much aware of that, while I'm driving and me and the person are talking, I will see a red light, let's say a traffic light, ahead of me. And because I see the traffic light, it might be green. I'll start slowing down because I know the traffic light is there. And it's like, because I'm talking to this person, I don't want to run through that traffic light. So I'll start slowing down, and then the person that's riding with me will say, "Yo, man, the light's green. Why are you slowing down?" I'll say, "Because I'm aware that there's a traffic light. I'm not trying." Long story. But anyway, moving right along, let me go initially into this other issue about Donald Trump. Okay, first off, I wasn't really watching the news, but on Facebook, someone had posted something about Tavis Smiley, what Tavis Smiley had himself said in reference to Donald Trump. And what I had written in response to what I had heard based upon that posting was, it's good to hear someone of the media calling Donald Trump out for what he is and what he supports. He's a straight-up racist and supports a racist ideology. Yet, as Smiley said, no one of the media is calling him out on this or reporting on Trump's racism on a consistent basis. A reason for that can be the established media is just as racist as Trump. The media can report Trump's point of view without endorsing it, although they do a lot more good by reporting and condemning it simultaneously. That is true, which is what the media doesn't do. And I think it's just horrendous. I mean, it's awful to see Trump and hear what he's saying. It's just awful. But anyway, going further into what I had written here, I had wrote this also. I had said I had watched an interview this morning via Facebook of some guy explaining a racist mindset to Dave Bowie as to how come the then MTV wasn't playing African American music or videos. The interviewer gave a lengthy nonsensical answer as to the why this was. He then asked Bowie if the answer to his question made sense. Bowie responded by saying, "I understand your point of view." It's obvious by Bowie saying that it in no way means he agrees with that clown, or that clown's supposed reasoning made sense. The same could and should be done with Trump and any other racist espousing the noxious views of racism. That's what I think, and I also found it, or thought it was good that I had seen that interview that Dave Bowie had given on MTV. And as we know, Dave Bowie is now deceased. Let him rest in peace. I will say that based upon just the answer, more so the question that he put to that MTV host who was interviewing him. Dave Bowie had asked the question as to how come there aren't more blacks on MTV. You know, music and dance. And like I said, the guy came back with some kind of nonsensical answer, and he asked Bowie, "Well, do what I just say make sense?" And Bowie said, "You know, well, I understand your point of view." Now, in my opinion, what Bowie only meant there was that himself being white and knowing a lot of other whites who are racist and having talked with them, he could understand where they're coming from. Possibly because at one point in time, he was coming from the same viewpoint. But however, he evolved. I will say that no doubt Bowie evolved up out of that nonsensical mindset and then was able to see that mindset for what it was, a lot of nonsense. That's why he responded by saying that, you know, "I understand your point of view." Although no doubt he didn't say, "I agree with your point of view," or "your point of view makes sense." He just said, "I understand your point of view," which I thought was spot on, very much interesting, and very much, you know, what our media doesn't do with Donald Trump. To hear the talking heads of the media talk in relation to Donald Trump, it almost sounds like they agree with him. Yes, it does. Excuse me. But also here on Trump again, I have something else that Dr. Stacey Patton had written via Facebook. She had written the word sigh, like sighh, you know, long sigh. She has said that nearly every morning I turn over in my bed and the first face I see and name or voice I hear on my tube is Donald Trump. I feel like I'm stuck in a crack house nightmare on replay. Anyway, so there he was again yesterday ranting about how President Obama has done nothing for the African-American community. He cited high unemployment and other issues we know to be true. I find it interesting how Trump and others will invoke these long-standing systemic realities facing black people and then blame Obama or some other Democrat in order to garner votes. But then when black people complain about these issues and blame structural racism, then they tell us to shut up and go find some bootstraps. Nothing is racist to racists except black people talking about racism. That's what Dr. Patton says. And then I had written in response to that, these words are from Dr. Stacey Patton. Yes, she's writing exactly how I feel. I know that feeling all too well, hence a reason I don't watch the news as I used to. Then, too, upon President Obama's election, I had thought I looked forward to watching more news than previously. Yet, it didn't turn out that way, and it hasn't been that way for the last 8 years. It's not that I dislike seeing our first African-American president whenever he's on. No. It's a thing to do with not liking what's said about him after he's been on by primarily white media hosts and commentators. Definitely so. That's the way that is. But I like especially what she has said there, because in a real sense, that's how I also think when she had said that nothing is racist to racist except black people talking about racism. Think about that and the way it actually is true. I mean, sometimes when you might be listening to the news, listen how they will swiftly accuse some black person of being racist because they're talking about the noxious effects of racism. And by extension, they're talking about racist white people. And these racist white people are quick to blame any black person in particular talking about racism, and therefore themselves, they're quick to blame that black person as being racist. That's completely ludicrous, asinine. But that's the way it is, exactly the way it is. And that's how those who like listening to Donald Trump actually think. Matter of fact, I also have here, I guess I'm not going to go into all that thing about Donald Trump, because I have something even more interesting, something that the daughter of Sarah Palin was talking about. Let me see if I can bring that up quickly here, if I have it. Okay, I'm sure I have it down there somewhere. It was outrageous what I had heard her say. Okay, I have it here. Our time is going short. We're down to minutes right now. But anyway, it says here, all black, the daughter of Sarah Palin has said, all black actors look the same. How can we choose one to get the Oscar? And the article says that abstinence advocate and cultural war blogger Bristol Palin recently lashed out at black actors who have complained that the slate of nominees for this year's Oscars were... Okay, I'm going to have to leave that article until next week because I'm just told that we have seconds left for the show. So with that, I'm going to go on and let us go out with some music to play. Okay, this is Lydia Caesar, a tune called Lifted. So here we go, and thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week. Urban Society signing off. Dollhouse Radio, Indy Morrell's Dollhouse Radio. Till next week, have a nice night.
Every time you come around, I get so lifted. Ooh, 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 ooh. Got to admit, I'm addicted. Ooh, 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 ooh. Cause you like a hit of the best lift. Boy, you got that ooh, 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 ooh. When I need a fix, you pull up some tricks. And I be like, ooh, 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 ooh. My man, he got the golden glove, the Midas touch. Loving like, ooh, he know I can never get enough. My favorite drug, overdosing on you. Cause men, I want the ordinary love. Oh, no. I went and found my diamond in the rough. Now he's mine. He ain't falling, stand up loving me the way. And I know to make him feel some type of way. Euphoria, I want more, yeah. Baby, take me every higher. Every time you come around, I get so lifted, yeah. Got to admit, I'm addicted, baby. on his fingertips. With every grip, I fall deeper into you. Come in, I want no ordinary love. Oh no, I went and found my diamond in the rough. Now he's mine. He ain't falling, said I love him either way.